All right, first I'd like to mention, as Ellie knows, today my sister made Aliyah. So this year is for that. Very exciting. Shavu Bano. Okay, so that is, I just wanted to start with that. Very, very exciting. Two points. First is we try to send out the Shito sheet for this sugya hopefully later this week. That's one. The second thing is I'm going to try to end on time for Mincha. If I end a little late, then seriously, if you want to walk out to be like, no hard feelings, that's totally fine. Okay, so definitely feel comfortable to do that. All right, so today we're going to do the topic of Mumar L'Teyavon. We're not doing Mumar L'Haches. We're not really done with that sugya yet. Hopefully next week we'll do Chazar Ashir and Mumar L'Haches. So as always, I like to do is I like to start off with a guiding question for the sugya. How do the sins of a Mumar L'Teyavon impact the way we view and treat him halachically? If you think about it, that's really what we were trying to figure out in the sugya. So in order to address this question, I'd like to break down the topic into five sections. First is to provide some background to the issue of Mumar L'Teyavon. Second is to analyze or to present conceptual perspectives on the status of Mumar L'Teyavon. Third, I'd like to pin down these conceptual options into specific shito. Four, present some nafkaminot or impacted issues. And five, I want to devote to an analysis of the Shitat HaRambam. So let's begin with the first section. The Gemara in Chulin, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph to Gimel Amud Bet, presents six suggested interpretations of the opening Mishnah. The fourth of those interpretations, suggested by Rav Ashi, relates to a Mumar L'Teyavon. In that context, Rav Ashi quotes the following statement of Rava. Amar Rava, Yisrael Mumar Ochel Nevelos L'Teyavon, Bodek Sakin V'Nosein Lo. So Yisrael Mumar eats Nevelos, who eats Nevelos L'Teyavon, you know, to satisfy himself, the desire. Bodek Sakin V'Nosein Lo. So if he wants to shecht, you know, kosher Jew checks the Sakin, and then you can give it to him. Mutalachom Mishkita. So, and then if you've undergone that process, you are permitted to eat from Mishkita. Avalo Badak V'Nosein Lo. Lo yishlo, but if you didn't check and you give it to him, he can't check. If he did check, bodek sakino acharav, nimsei sakino yafet mutar lachol mishkitaso. So if you find that his sakin was kosher in your post shkita checkup, then you're allowed to eat from it. V'im lav, if it's not kosher, also lachol mishkitaso, it's impermissible to eat from a shkita. Now in Dalet Amud Aleph, the Gemara provides the reason for Rava's opinion. Kevan de'ika hetera v'isura, since there's both options of shechting correctly in a kosher fashion, because if he has the kosher knife, lo shaveg hetera v'achil isura, he's not going to intentionally do the usher thing, he's going to do the kosher way of shechting. And when something's easily accessible, they're going to the Mumar L'Teyavon is obviously going to take advantage of that. But if it's not readily available, kosher sakin, right, we assume the Mumar L'Teyavon is not going to expend the effort to find a kosher one. And essentially, the Mumar L'Teyavon is lazy. On Gilmol Mabet, just to take a step back, the Gemara presents the conflicting opinion with Rava, which is the Shita of Abaye. Abaye, we simply say, lo sfir le hadi Rava. It doesn't hold like Rava. And then later, we should note that when the Gemara is attacking Rava's opinion, which could be, as we'll discuss, maybe the reason of Abaye, it states, Mumar oso davar lo, my taima, kevin de dashbe ketera damile. So it says that maybe you can't abide by the shita of Rava, that if you're bodek sakin and it's kosher, then you can allow to eat from a shita. Why? Because since he's so frequently doing it in an usher fashion, it's become ketera damile, it's become like totally permissible to him. You can't trust them. We'll get back a little bit into what this line means later on. So in Shir, we contended that the machlokas between Abaye and Rava is a very suggestive debate. Why does Abaye disagree with Rava? Why would a Mumar L'Teyavon be prohibited from doing Shechita if you have these practical constraints put into place? And so what this does is it prompts us to explore the different conceptual possibilities of the deficiencies of a mumar l'teyavon. Okay, so that's the first section. The second section is the conceptual perspectives on the status of a mumar l'teyavon. So in Shiri presented two primary possibilities for how to understand the problem of a mumar l'teyavon. The first was a chashash sheker ne'emanus issue. We just don't trust him to be honest about whether or not he shechted this animal in a kosher fashion. But otherwise, he's not really viewed as a rebellious person. He's not a perfect Jew, but he doesn't lose his cheskas kasheras. And so the way we're looking at averos in this sense of the mumar l'teyavon is much more narrow. We quoted Yitamu Chatoim in Haaretz, Chatoim ben Achotim is external to the person. So he's just a weak-minded individual, but it doesn't really impact his status as a person. The second option we suggested was that there actually is a formal psul of a Gavra Rasha. So the fact that he can overcome his weakness and his desire when it comes to like these issues of Kedusha, that actually reflects on him as a person. There's something fundamentally off with him, and there's a flaw with who he is if he's not able to control himself. He's not able to control his Yetzer. If he was a good enough, devoted enough Jew, then of course he would have been able to control himself. And so here, the way we're looking at sin is that sin actually defines the person, right? Even though, it's l'teyavon, the fact that you're still willing to do sin, that's much more broad. It reflects a fundamental flaw in you as a gavra. Now, I just wanted to give a parallel example of what these two types of issues could be. It's not an exact parallel, but I think it's just helpful to think about. Because what does psul gavra, what does ne'emanus mean? So just to give a parallel example. So case by an isha testifying, right? So you could have cases of testimony where you're worried about the person, they're just going to be a liar. In the past they've lied, they're a liar once or a liar twice, they're going to be lying again. We don't trust them. But that's sort of like a ne'emanus issue. But why is an isha not allowed to testify? Likely, it's not an issue of trust, or it's really an issue of just there's a psul gavra. She's considered to be fully excluded from the world of edus. So here, my point is just to say that, just to try to explain what do we mean by a psul gavra. It's not necessarily a question. There's this pragmatic trust issue here or there. We're talking about as a person, right? There's something. As a result of the actions, then there's a psul gavra versus this ne'emanus thing, which is sort of like testimony. Guys lied many times, you don't trust them. Now, okay, so just to quickly sum up again, right, the giving into to temptation doesn't really say anything about his general commitment for the first side, and the second side is that it's actually a sign that there's a deficiency in his general commitment. Now, Rav Rosenzweig noted that the inherent tension and the words mumar l'teyavon actually points to these two options. Mumar, of course, has a connotation of rebelliousness, and it sounds like a description of the gavra. L'teyavon implies kind of the opposite. It means that, he means well, he just, gives into his temptations. Okay, that's the second section. The third section, and now we get into it with the Rashba and Ra'ah, is that we're trying to pin down these conceptual options into Shita. Let's not just leave it up in the air. Let's concretely put them into these two Shito. So these are the Shitas of the Rashba and the Ra'ah and the Torah Sabayis, the Bedek Abayis, and the Mishmeres Abayis. Torah Sabayis and Mishmeres Abayis are the Rashba. Bedek Abayis is the Ra'ah. So just broadly speaking, for a Chazar Shir, we'll give away the tension at the beginning, excitement. We'll just say it, So the Rashba basically judges the Mumar l'teyavon very nicely over and over again. He keeps giving the benefit of the doubt. And we'll see he's very generous in some cases. The Ra'ah, on the other hand, keeps shutting the Rashba down. Okay, so Rashba very much open to Mumar l'teyavon and his ability in various cases. And the Ra'ah shuts him down a number of times. Now, we suggested that the Rashba is holding like the first option that we mentioned earlier. The Rashba is a chashash sheker. Right? The Rashba, in general, he looks at this Mumar optimistically. He gives him the benefit of the doubt. There's nothing wrong with him as a person, as a gavra. And the question is, in some cases, does he possess ne'emanus? In some cases, is he lacking ne'emanus? So we'll see. Right? Really, the Rashba, the fact that he's so optimistic about about this Mura Teavon, it kind of shows it's not really he's a flawed Yisra. It's not there's something fundamentally flawed about him as a Gavra. It's just whatever, this guy, you know, Nebuch, he makes mistakes, he gives into his desire. But unless there's, you know, a reason for otherwise, then we can, you know, that's not an admonish issue, then we would probably allow the guy to, we would probably trust the guy. Okay, we'll pin this all down in just a moment in a number of cases. In contrast, we suggested that the Ra'ah believes it's a psul gavra. So he's a high level of Rasha, and therefore for the Ra'ah, and this is really a critical point, any time we veer off of Umdina and Chazaka, then we no longer trust him, okay? Because it's a problem with him as a Gavra. So just to sum up, for the Rasha, basically, as long as you don't have to completely rely on his credibility, then we make him mutter. And the Ra'ah basically thinks the opposite, right? That whenever Chazaka is insufficient and we need the contribution, the support of the Mumer L'Tayavon, then you're in trouble. Right? It's a Gavra Rasha. So on the Chazaka, on the Umdina stuff, we're able to rely on. But on him, not at all. Now, the Rashba very much pushes Rava, and Rava about the Bedikah Sakin. Okay, and he's really surprised about the Rambam's Shita in a few places. I don't want to spoil the Rambam, but basically the Rashba's problem with the Rambam is probably hinges upon the Rambam's understanding of Mumer L'Teyavon, and that's really what the Rashba's finding so disagreeable. Okay, so let's mention 6 points in the Rashba. Okay, 6 points in the Rashba. The Rashba basically is kind of asking the following question: why no checking the sakin after he shechs? Check beforehand, but why not check also after he shechs? Second point is that why do we believe this Mumer L'Teyavon about Bedikah Simanim afterwards? Why don't we do Bedikah Simanim? Why do we trust him that there wasn't something off in the actual Shechita? So the Rashba basically tries to argue that this is clearly a Ne'emanus point. So it says, V'al korchenu anu somchen alav, u'ma'aminin oso, b'mikzas inyanei Shechita, kevan sh'eino avarian l'haches. So basically it says that clearly we rely on him for some inyanim of Shechita, and then he quotes these dinim, tzarech livdok simanim acharav, and so on and so forth. Okay. So that's the Rashba's regarding those first 2 points. Now, the Ra'ah doesn't disagree with him about this. We have to be clear. Right? The Ra'ah doesn't disagree with him that there's no need for this, for a Bedikah afterwards, and that there's, and that we don't trust him about Bedikah Simanim. Now, the Ra'ah agrees with the Rashba about that, but for sort of a different reason. Namely, it's the Chazaka. It's not about him as a Ne'emanus person. No, it's the Chazaka. Okay? Good. All right. So now we're going to mention 3 other cases where they actually disagree. Okay? So those are the first 2 points that we mentioned in the Rashba. And then we're going to mention 3 cases where they actually disagree. And again, just for the Ra'ah, anytime we get outside of Chazaka and Umdina, then we're in trouble, because then relying on him as a person. And the Rashba is sort of the opposite, that anytime we get around the Ne'emanus issues, when we're relying sort of on him as a person, then we're able to be more makil. So now let's just three cases. One, do we rely on Rov Mitzuyin? So the Rashba says, yes, we do rely on Rov Mitzuyin. The Ra'ah, on the other hand, says, no, we don't rely on Rov Mitzuyin here. The second point is there's this case of the 2 knives. Right, so we go to this Mumer L'Teyavon's house, and we see that he shechted an animal, and then we want to do his bedika on the sakin, and there's 2 sakinim in front of us. So the question is, which one did he actually shecht with? So are we able to trust him to say, hey, I actually did shecht with the kosher one, or am I not? Are we not allowed to trust him about that? So the Rashba basically says, yes, you're allowed to trust him about this case. to have two sakinim, you could say, yes, he did shaft with the correct one. We can rely on him for that. The Ra'ah, on the other hand, says no. And he says, unless we know for sure one was closer. Yeah. Yeah, so he says basically that because we don't know if during the Shechita which one was closer and whether he knew where the one of them was in the house. So we can't really rely on him. Once we get outside this chazaka of lo shav, you know, well, that if both are in front of him and you know that he's going to do the heter one, anytime we're outside of that, now it's he's just telling us we're believing him that you know he had them closer by, he had one closer by, or that he used one, we're not going to rely on him. Okay. Now, again, this sort of reflects right that the Rashba holds it's not an issue of. Him as it's not a mamad pugam. There's nothing wrong with him as a status. Whereas the Ra'ah is saying, once you get outside of that, you're in trouble. You have to rely only on the chazaka that one is closer to him. Third example is that of Ophos. Yeah. So the third example is Ophos. So there's a shechted Oph, and can you trust him to say that he went to a mumcha? So Rashba again says yes, you could trust him. Ra'ah says no. Right, his edus isn't believed at all, right? Because he would have to go to the shochet. We don't trust him to say that. Yeah. Okay. Good. So we can quote some lines of the Rashba and Ra'ah, but I just wanted to quote one. So the Bedek Habayis, the Ra'ah and the Bedek Habayis says the following: Beis Aleph Shar Aleph. Yeah. So you see, when talking about the case of Shei Sakinim, so it says V'Avisha Asher. Even though we have this kosher knife in front of us now, how does the Ra'ah describe him? Anyone remember the word? Avarian, right? Sorry, Avarian Zeh, Eno Naman Lanu Beiduso Klal. So guys, how does the Ra'ah describe him as an Avarian? Right? This guy is totally problematic as a person, right? He is defined by being an over Aver Soteyavon. So therefore, and so that's really the, I guess, most perfectly captures the Ra'ah's stance. Yes.
It sounds like in a lot of these mashmashim, it seems maybe they're arguing about just whether or not the rumor has an emunas, but not so much whether the problem is his lack of emunas or his himself as a god. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, your point is that. Should we trust him in these cases?
Does he have
right? Could that be?
Does two models yeah? Have are that one so, is that even the Mako one is that his Nemanis is still a problem? Yeah.
Right. So in general, there's an issue which is like you can always try to formulate it in a way where you know like we'll say for the Rush for the Rambam later if you know what I'm referring to. I think the point here is that we see it's clearly an Avarian. Right, and with the fact that we're not relying on him at all, we're not able to rely on him at all. The Ra'ah's formulations kind of keep implying that it's more than just this chashash sheker. He calls him an avarian. Yeah, as we were going to say.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Continue on that question. Like, what does it mean that we're saying he's chashash sheker in like lack of nemanus? If we're saying that's within the Rashba is saying that he's broken the tzuyin and.
Yeah. So it's okay. Good. So so this is a good point. The Rashba, we're not saying here that because chashash sheker he's puzzled. The point is that if it's just a chashash sheker, then when we're going to rely on him as a person, we're going outside. You know, then are we able to rely on him? So when we're going outside of now, because the point is here we're isolating him as just a person. That's the point of Rosenthal is making. Now we're putting him in isolation. This is not chazaka anymore. This is not, what do we say about him? So if he's a psul gavra, then he's totally done, right? We can't, that's the Ra'ah's point. But for the Rashba, we're saying he's allowed because there's nothing fundamentally wrong with him as a person. So if we can get rid of the practical neamonis issues, the Rashba says, we should trust him in this case. Now, modest issues aside, there's nothing wrong with him as a person. Then we're able to rely on him.
I'm just confused. Why should there be no modest issues at all? I mean, if we're saying we can rely on him, rely on his word, and he has broken the tzuyin, and he doesn't require bedikas sakin, he could say he used a butcher knife.
Yeah.
What lack of modest does he have?
For a case, the Gemara's case, regular bedikas sakin.
That we assume he's not going to go out of his what? That's not a lack of nemanis, that's just a lack of...
Yeah, we assume, so we assume what's going to happen is that if we ask him, where he's not going to be honest with us. Because it's likely what he would have done is he would have gone and eaten the... he would have shefted this thing inappropriately because he didn't have a good knife. That's what we're talking about. We don't trust him to tell us honestly what how this animal was shechted. That's clear from the Gemara. No? Yeah.
So I think the point is that he's lacking that manas, but only in areas that he's going to have a problem with. Like the Mitzvah Torah areas, that's where he's lacking that manas. These other cases where we negate that factor and there's no more issue with Mitzvah Torah, then he does have that manas. Like according to the Ra'ah, he's totally mufka completely. It's not just about Mitzvah Torah. So even if you're going to take cases where you get rid of that factor, then there's still going to be a problem because there's something wrong with the Nazigah.
Good, that makes sense? Okay, great. Good? So hold your hand up right here. Okay. Awesome. Last case, I didn't see this inside. Maybe someone else did. The Shud HaRashba talks about maybe he could take a Shavua, the Mumar Teavon. So he doesn't act, in the end, he thinks he can't. But Rosenthal pointed out that even just the Ihava Amina here clearly reflects that this guy fundamentally is a kosher guy. It's just, it's Nemanis issues. Because if he was a psul garba, there's no way you would even fathom that he could take a shavua. That's what the point of Rosenzweig made. Yeah. You saw it inside. Chelik Aleph Simon. So 164. Okay. What? He's not even serious about it at all. You're saying. Right, so, yeah, what do you say?
I don't think Rebbe was saying that he grappled with the situation in Tshuva. I think it's one of the fact that he even has a Tshuva.
Right, exactly. The fact that he even, references it at all, if it was irrelevant, it wouldn't be in the Shud HaRashba at all. Exactly. Good. All right, so those are the 6 points we made in the Shud HaRashba. In the Rashba. 1, why not Bedika after the Shechita, Bedika Simanim. We mentioned the Shechita Oaf case. We mentioned the Shtei Sakinim case. And we mentioned, I'm forgetting the first one, Rov Metzuyan. Okay, and then the last thing we mentioned was the Shavua and the Shud HaRashba. All right, so that was, I think, the easier part. Now we got to work through the Nafka Mina, okay? So let's dig in here. Here I think we can point to five. This is section number 4. So here we can point to 5 nafka mino pertaining to how he perceives a problem with a mumar l'teavon. Now I just want to point out that I think, sort of intuitively or just based off of the Gemara, the burden of proof is to try to prove that it's more than just a we don't trust the guy. He's a chashash sheker. He's a gavra. We're worried about him. Not falling prey to his desires. So I think what we were trying to do in Shir a little bit was trying to prove or to give evidence for the other side that it's a Gavra Russia. Meaning, I think there's a counter pressure, right? So we're trying to make that point. Say, oh, really? It could be a Gavra Russia. So I think here you'll see in the Nafka Mino, it's saturated with evidence for it being more than just a practical concern. So I think you'll see just sort of more heavily in that direction, but I think that's the reason why. Okay, so let's go through 5 nafka mino. They're all different genres, but we'll call them all nafka mino or impacted issues. So the first nafka mino is understanding the debate between Abaye and Rava. So Rava's shita is presumably based on two assumptions. Either A, that this is a, not either. So this is a chashad problem, that we are suspicious of whether he performed a kosher shechita. And then 2 is that you are capable of neutralizing that pragmatic chashad problem through bedika sakin. So we're worried about whether or not he shechted correctly, and then whether or not, and then the rabbi also assumes that you're able to actually take care of that practical problem through bedika sakin. Now, Abaye can disagree with either of those assumptions. So let's start with the reverse order of the second assumption. So we mentioned, in Shir, we mentioned the Shita of the Rashash. So Rashash says, regarding Kevin de Dash Behav Le Keheter, The Rashi says it's like a din of kevin she'avar adam avera b'shina ba hutralo. So it's basically, it cuts to a point that like once a person keeps doing this avera, it's like the whole thing is out the window. Like he's not taking it seriously at all anymore. You can't trust him to do it. Once he hits that point of doing it so many times, it's like it's completely mutter to him. There's no difference between doing it in a kosher way and doing it in an usher way. But still here what we're saying is this is all kind of practical, right? For that was an argument we were making. It's not saying something fundamental about him as a gavra, it's just practically at this point, you go down a road, it's like the Rambam about free will. Eventually you hit the point where, you do this avera once, twice, three times, you lose your free will. Maybe that's a little bit what we're saying here. Now the second option is Abai disagrees with the first assumption. Right? What's the problem with the Mumer Latiavon? Is it just a chashash sheker like Rava? Right? Or Abai may be saying it's not pragmatic, it's because he acquires a shame rasha. It's a psua gabra. Okay, so this is sort of a nachmina how you understand what the psula, so you might understand the baye and rava differently as a result. Now so we mentioned for a baye that it could really go both ways. I think the way we were more we thought was more compelling was that a baye holds it's a psua gabra. I mean, the Rashash was like the lesser option here. Now, just a qualifying note, though, because I think it's important. Possibly like Rava doesn't mean, which most of the Rishonim do, it doesn't mean that you are having sort of a narrower view of Mumer L'Teyavon, right? It doesn't mean that you don't think it's a Psul, Gavra. It's just Abaye is really strong. Like Abaye, it's very compelling that it'd be a Psul Gavra. Yeah, Shitsi, go ahead. So I think I'm trying to remember offhand if there's like a good one to point to. I think just related to what I just said just before, I think like it's very compelling that this is what Abaye is saying. Like this is like sort of the intuitive one. The burden of proof is just kind of say, how would it not be a psul gabra? Just saying specifically by Abaye. Because Abaye is disagree, there's no practical thing that works, right? Okay. So that's the first nafkamina. The second nafkamina is how I understand the case of Mumer La'arelos in the Gemara. So on Dalet Amud Bet in the Gemara brings a proof from a Tosefta that mentions Mumer La'arelos. And so as part of that discussion, the Gemara states, Mumer L'Dabra'echad lo have Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula, kind of implying that there's this other Deya that Mumer L'Dabra'echad have Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula. Okay, but what exactly is this Mumer La'arelos that we're talking about? So Rashi, Rashba, and Tosfos all think that it's referring to a Mumar Lahachis. Right? This makes sense in terms of this Mumar L'chol HaTorah Kula point that if a Mumar Lahachis for one, then maybe I'd be Mumar Lahachis L'chol HaTorah Kula, something like that. Now, in terms of that specific issue, it works out much better. But you have another problem is that there's a counterpression of the Gemara. If you take a look at the Gemara, if you're reading this way, that's a Mumar Lahachis, then the Gemara later is shifting between the Lahachis and later the Teyavo and the Oso Davar. So it's just, there is a problem with reading it that way in the Gemara. Perhaps the reason why they do so is because they want to avoid saying it's a Mumer Teyavo, because that raises a whole slew of issues. Why would they say that? Because they think it's a Chashash Sheker, it's an Nemanis thing. That was the point of Rosenstein tried to make. Now, there's another reading of the Gemara, though, which is the reading of the Ran and the Rush and the Rambam according to the Kesef Mishnah, that Mumar L'Arelos is actually talking about a Mumar L'Teyavon. So how could you possibly conceive of having this Hava Amina, that Mumar, or this implied right, Hava Amina, that Mumar L'Teyavon, this Mumar L'Arelos is a Mumar L'Teyavon, right, that he'd be a Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula. So, Neil, what do we say? Brooks, what do we say? Yeah, I mean, how could if we think it's Mumer L'Teyavon, Mumer L'Arelos, so how could we understand that there's this Havamina or this potential this possibility that a Mumer L'Teyavon would be a Mumer L'Chol HaTorah Kula? Exactly, right? That here it would have to extend beyond. It's not a Mumer L'Teyavon for this. It's not a Mumer for the. But the point is that likely what this means is that he has a shame Rasha. He's a Psul Gavra. And so what that means is that would extend past just the immediate practical concerns of L'Teyavon. It's you know, and not this, you know, davar echad, it would extend into kol Torah kula. And so basically, if you hold, the more you hold that something is like a less of a practical concern, but it seems to be much more formal, right? That's a strong indicator. Mumar l'teavon is a gavra rasha, right? To say a mumar is a, to say someone is a mumar l'chol Torah kula, a mumar l'teavon, it really only makes sense if you think it's a shame mumar. Now you could argue with me and say, hey, but the Gemara rejects that, so it's true. But it could be that there are echoes in other, meaning it could, whenever the Gemara rejects a havamina or, you know, discards something, or either entirely rejects it, or it could be that in some form it's still accepted and has remnants and still has some ramifications as a result. We'll say that for the Rambam that's true. Okay, third nafkamina, or third piece of evidence, let's say, is a Tosos on Hei Amibet in Maseches Chulin. So the Gemara raises the debate about if Mumar L'Chelev is also Mumar L'Dam, and then therefore if you're a Mumar L'Dam as well, then you can't bring a Korban for violating that. Okay? So that's the issue that comes up. Now, why would this be the case? So Tosos gives two answers. We'll ignore the first one for the moment. But Tosos says the following. The Davka B'Chelev Adam Pligi L'fi Sheheim Shavin. Why are they arguing about Chelev and Dam? Because they're equal, let's say. Shavin will be strong about it. Sheish Kareis B'Shnehen V'Olin L'Gavoa V'Namru B'Lav Echad Kol Chelev L'Chol Dam Lo Tochelu. So the point is that there's a special relationship between Chelev and Dam based on Kareis, and it's one Pasuk. Right? It's considered to be Mumar L'Oso Davar to some extent. But now what's interesting here is that it comes without Mumar L'Dam, it comes without this any Yetzer Hara, right? Nasho Katza L'Echol Dam. Someone, they don't like eating Dam. So Mumar L'Chelev, Mumar L'Dam, that doesn't really make sense on any practical level, right? Why would I want... So what does Tosos say? So Tosos says this point, that because they're on the same level, right, then even though practically Mumar L'Chelev is not going to be Mumar L'Dam, because Nasho Katza Bo, Nasho Katza L'Echol Dam, even so, we're going to consider it to be a Mumar L'Dam because they're on the same level. Now, what does that point to? Kareem, what does that point to? Chashash Sheker or something more than that? More than that, right? It's considered to be, anytime we go beyond this, it's not a behavioral question. Behaviorally, this doesn't make any sense. There's no taiva, they're not the same. But on a more formal plane, where we're talking about a psul gavra, and this, you know, once you're a Mumar for this, we establish you as a Mumar for this, for anything on that level, you become a Mumar, then that's clearly about a gavra issue. It's not just a namanus issue. Yeah.
Sorry, I was a little confused by this point because, I mean, I don't think we as Jews have like a taiva for dam, but there's certainly enough world cultures even today and definitely back then that definitely ate dam. So I don't like there are enough people in the world that have a taiva for dam that it could, that this argument could still be a practical one.
So. Potentially, meaning your point could be well taken, but the Tosfos doesn't think that. Right, so I say within Tosfos, it's clearly that way. Yeah.
I don't think you say no one has a taiva for dam. The taiva for dam is a taiva for chela.
Oh, that's it. Let's see.
You wouldn't say that. Oh, automatically, if you have a taiva for dam, now we're gonna disqualify you for chela. Also, because naturally the two aren't linked. It's not like, oh, I love meat, so I also have fish.
You're saying this isn't like a ontological point.
It's totally different. So you wouldn't say that unless, like Rebbe was saying, it's a dual
connected. Yeah, in other words, it could be for like unkosher meat, like just completely disconnected.
Alish is a nasho katsa lechol dam. It's not saying that anyone would be like that. It would be. It's not saying, it's saying nasho katsa lechol dam. That's specific to this individual, but other individuals would potentially.
Doesn't make sense that, oh, now we'll say you can't, you're going to be a mumar for chelev also, because dam and chelev aren't linked behaviorally, just because someone is kosher
right.
Dam.
No, I get the point, I'm not sure.
You eat chelev, because those are different.
Right, for sure. No, I agree with you. I'm not sure if he's saying that like that's only for that individual, or like a person in general doesn't like dam, but I guess why would there be an issue of dam in the first place if no one liked having dam, I guess. Is that your point or no?
No, again, good point.
Are you disagreeing with Noah, or...?
Yeah, I'm trying and showing, like, it's not... Tosfos isn't saying no one likes Dam. He's saying just because someone likes Dam, it doesn't... Rebbe's saying, Tosfos just says someone is a Mumar L'Dam is also going to be a Mumar L'Chelev. But why? Those two aren't linked.
Okay. Right. Not. Okay. Yeah. No. I agree with you about that point. I'm not sure if he, what he's saying necessarily about the blood, whether anybody would nasho katzal echol or not. Okay. But your point is well taken. Okay. Fourth nafkamina is the hashavas aveda meridin nafkamina. Okay. So this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, daf chav vavam and aleph, to chav vavam and bet. So the Gemara there discusses the din of lo malin v'lo meridin. So So the Gemara states haminim v'hamisoro v'hamumrim hayu meridin v'lo malin. So you are allowed to lower them into the pit, but you can't bring them up. So now the Gemara then rejects this and says, "Amalei ani shona lechol abed achichal rabos is a mumar." So the Gemara says, but what about the chol b'achichal rabos and mumar that hashavas aveda? But Adamar hayu maridin. So then the Gemara says, "Some you can mumar. Get mumar off of this list. You're right." So then the Gemara says, "V'lishni lei kam b'mumar chol nevel sotayavon kam mumar chol nevel sahachas." So then the Gemara splits and says, "Oh, this case is talking about mumar chol nevel sotayavon, and the other one's ochel nevel sahachas." Okay, but. There's three significant points that I'd like to mention here, and we'll start off with just the obvious point from the Gemara. So, the Hava Mina that Mumar Latevon would be included in this, first of all, is just shocking, right? Meaning, before we even get started, it's just, that's shocking. The second thing is that, and this is the same point, that the fact that you need a limud to teach you that it's not the case is also just further reinforcing that. Right, like you need a limud to tell you dafkali. It's not like, oh yeah, this we need a limud to teach you. So what we are trying to say is that the fact that you need a limud shows us as begavra, right, mumar l'tayavon fits into this category, and then we need a limud to tell us that he's not in that. It's a gavra rasha issue. That's the first point we made within the Gemara. Now the second thing is the second point we made was within Tosfos. So if you look at Tosfos basically tries to preserve the Hava Mina. So he, in Tosfos, he says that, maybe that we do require you to do Hashavas Aveda, but does that mean that Emelecha Moridin, maybe you could still do Moridin? And then Tosfos says, no, that's obviously not the case, because you have to, you know, Hashavas Aguf is also Hashavas Aveda, whatever. So Tosfos discards that. But even in the beginning of Tosfos, you could just read it. It's clear it's trying to preserve that there is this, you know, shame min, as the Gemara later calls him, Hachas, right? Basically, you take this very seriously, right? Anything that you're going to try to say, you can't do Moridin, you need a dafka, kind of prove why. And Tosfos is trying to preserve this Havamina again, right? This very the idea that you would kind of, the more you're taking this seriously, again, shows that it's about a Gavra Rasha. We're putting him into this category. Now, the Meiri, I saw this just before Chazar is here. So the Meiri says, "Well, Meshuma be'achilas yisurin im le'teyavon, v'yish mefarshin shelo malin v'lo moridin." That's sort of a middle ground. You're not, you don't take them out, but you don't put them in. So the fact that you're lo malin, it's, and this is for le'teyavon, he's a gavra rasha. This is, you know what I mean? You would never say you aren't allowed to take someone out of a pit unless they're a gavra. It's not someone, you know, they eat a few non-kosher chips, they're eating some non-kosher. No. Like, this has to be a gavra rasha, because otherwise you're not allowed to take them out of a pit. So that's the Meiri. The third point I wanted to make here, and then I'll take any questions, is that Tosfos understands that Sami Mikan Mumar is only regards to Horada Lavor, but it doesn't take them off the list for Yordan Legehenim. So, I mean, even once we say, we take them off of, we say, Lo Meridin, and Malin Velo Meridin, even after we say that, and even though we say Shavas Aveda, still we're going to say that the Mumar Tevon is on the books. We keep trying to keep him in the fold within this Mumar category, within, you know, even after we are trying to say, okay, you can't put him in the pit, even after you say, you know, you have to give him back his stuff. But the point is that we're trying to keep him on the books for this issue, which indicates that he is a shame Russia. Okay, is that point clear? That, again, Tosfos keeps trying to maintain that he has the status. He's trying to keep him in the fold here, And it's not just, it's clearly not just like a Ne'amanus issue. Again, it's clearly says something about him as a Gavra. I find this to be like the best proof. Let's say this Gemara and this Tosaf, I think this is a very compelling argument. It's so stark, right? Like, talking about putting him in a pit, can't take him out, guy, you know, did a few Averus L'Tehavon. So I think it's a very strong proof. Okay. Any questions? Yes. Yeah, I mean, Tosis at the beginning is saying, oh, how do we know? He starts handling about, oh, maybe, you know, maybe we could say that, how do we know that maybe you are able to do Moridin still, even if you have to give back as a Shavas Aveda. So why are you trying to say that just because I have to give back as a Aveda, it's also not Moridin?
He's dealing with this.
So that was the first one. Yeah, second question.
And also the second, I mean, Tosus with Sami Mikhal Mumar. What is the case of the Mumar though? I mean, what Mumar are we taking off the list? We're taking off the Teavon or the Hafez?
Teavon.
Teavon? So,
yeah, okay, but we're going to say it then?
You just said it last year, Magen Avraham and.
Right, then the Magen Avraham and the Rav Eger. Yeah. So I guess Machlokas.
Wait,
are you aware? I think the Sefer Torah is still Nisraf, right, or something.
No, I
didn't see it. I didn't see it inside since yesterday. Anyone saw it inside? Yeah, you saw it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he says before that most even
in. Okay, fine. So it's clear this Tosaf, I guess, is on the extreme, but at that point, yeah. Fine. Last proof, I think this is a pretty interesting one, is the Tosas HaRush and Horios Yid Aleph Amid Aleph. This isn't exactly the point we were trying to make about Gavra Rasha, but if you take the Tosas HaRush and you just take it a step further, then it's exactly the point we're trying to make. Okay? That's basically what we're trying to do. So, maybe in Yavin, all right. So, the Tosas HaRush is talking about Yayin Nesach. So, the Gemara is talking about Mumar and says, Tanur Rabbanan Achal Chilev Zehu Mumar Beizu Mumar Achal Nevelos to Trepos Shkatzim Ramashim V'Shasa Yain Nesach. So now all those cases, like no one wants to eat Chilev, and no one wants, you know, oh sorry, no one wants to eat Shkatzim Ramashim. And so all those cases we could deal with, Toso says, basically, and that's according to Rashi, right? But what about Mumar Yain Nesach? Because Mumar Yain Nesach could be the Teyavon. Someone might want to have Yain Nesach. So why are you grouping that in with the categories of Shkatzim Ramashim? You know, this should be removed. It's a Mumar L'Tehavon. So he says, Tosos says the following. Tosos HaRush says the following. So, here, do I have the line? Yeah. It says, El Yainesa Mayikila Meimar, Umi Yainesach Ikala Kume Beyain Shen Nistanich Lefne Avodazar, Velamish of the Angu of Tevlo, Ela Kevan De Pakar Kule Hai Lishos Yain Shen Nasil Nevodazara, Lefne Avodazar, Vadim. The fact that you're such a taiva, and you're willing to go and drink Yainesach, right, because that was before Avodah Zarah, you're vada amin. You're definitely amin. You're someone who's willing to give into their desires to do something so horrible to have yain nesach. That, you know, that's it's too severe of a chet that you wouldn't be considered to be amin. So it's. I think the point is the following. I mean, Tosos HaRush, I think in general, is not saying that a Mumar L'Tehavon becomes this min, he becomes this, Gavra Rasha status. But his point is, or the point I guess we were trying to derive from it, and maybe if anyone thought differently, please correct me, is that there are times when averos define who you are as a person, right? Like the fact that you're doing these averos, right, regardless of your motivation, right, whether you're doing it L'Hachas or L'Tehavon, that's so problematic that it makes you a Gavra Rasha. It makes you as a person off. Yeah, so you're... What? No, because the whole point is that Dafka, he's saying that how could this... Because the Gemara there is trying to figure out, it's talking about Mumar for all these categories. And then I thought the point is that, oh, but Tosu says that this doesn't have to be a Mumar L'Hachas. This could be a Mumar L'Tehavon even for Yain Nesa. So then Tosu is saying that, even if it's a Mumar L'Tehavon for Yain Nesa, it still is considered to be a Min because it's so bad. Yeah? Okay. I'm wary of disagreeing with Alex, but I think on this one, that's what he's talking about. You have it open there?
Yeah.
Okay. You think it's talking about L'Hachas there, Dafka?
I think that's the point. He's trying to get it close. Meaning, even though you could have some type of, even though there's an appetite to it, but it's still a hotness. How do you demonstrate that?
What did you say, Ali?
I think she was interested.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so we'll take a look inside later. That was the sense I got, but I think that's what we're saying here too. But you hear my point that I don't think he's saying in general Gavra, like this guy here, becomes, you know, Murat Tevon becomes like a Gavra Russia. But the point is that we were trying to derive is that there are times when sin, you know, regardless of your motivation, that can impact who you are as a person, and you as a Gavra, makes you a min. So we're not saying, so Tosar Rashi isn't saying that for everything, but we're trying to expand on that and say in a similar sense that regardless of your motivation, you know, you're willing to commit sins, you're doing sins, and like that defines you as a Gavra Russia. You've achieved this level of rishos. So those are the five nachkamino we had, okay? So the Abaye, Mumar La'arelos we talked about, we discussed the Tosos and the Chulin Heyam Abed about Mumar L'Chelev, whether that's also Mumar L'Dam. We talked about Lo Malin V'Moridin, and then we talked about Yai Nesach. Good? Those are the five, and now we get to the most exciting part of the shiur, which is the Rambam. Good? Everything clear so far? Called Shari V'Kayam? Brooks, no, it's not clear? Okay.
I think it rose, if I wrote it down correctly, I think he raised the possibility that maybe those that are just saying that he becomes a Mumar L'Hafis because of the Mumar Ha'is, but I think he still preferred to say what Elliot is saying, that he's still a Mumar L'Hafis. Yeah.
No, I'm saying, I think the point in the Gemara there is that like all these people become a Min, right? So all those other cases are clearly L'Hafis. Point is that this elevate, even though it doesn't have to be lahachas, what he's doing for that elevates him to the status of an afterwards. I'm saying, but initially it's because it's a teavon.
Right.
Okay.
I'm saying either way it starts out with teavon. I think we're also talking another possibility that maybe like he goes to lahachas and then he becomes a man.
It goes
to go directly from a teavon to a man.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I think.
Okay. Yeah.
The lashon in the Tosas Harash is after that. He says. It doesn't matter that it's that type because what matters is that he did it, right?
Yeah, in the end.
It's like even though he might be doing it for type of reasons, a teyavon, it doesn't matter. The fact that he did something that's so egregious, like drinking something that was done for Brazar, seems to be a myth. So that sounds like the Tosarosh is saying that's Mumla teyavon.
Yeah, no, but you have to assume that Tosar Rashi is responding to Rashi, right, I think. Because Rashi there says, oh, all these are not the Teyavon. And Tosar Rashi said, no, what about Yai Nesa? That is the Teyavon. That could be the Teyavon. Saying, even if it is the Teyavon, it doesn't matter. It's such a grave offense that it's considered to be, still his Vadai Minhu, as Tosar Rashi says. That's the point. Okay, good. Now head to Shita Sarambam, section number 5. This will take up the remainder of our time. If you have the... Everyone has a Rambam, I can only imagine. So take out your Rambams, Dalia, let's get to work. Okay, so basically, I think here is maybe the best example even we've... No, Mitzvah Shulin as well. But I think this is perhaps one of the best examples of Ronsweig's, I guess, Mahalach and how to read Rambams, both in terms of the Lashon Azav of the Rambam, every formulation, every, false start, the Rambam sounds like this at the beginning, the fact that the Rambam, always has these global views, the fact that the Rambam often diverges from Gemaras, and if he diverges from the Gemaras, clearly some underlying conceptual perspective, the fact that the Rambam, should be consistent throughout all the Mishnah Torah, it doesn't change in one place or the other, you have to read everything in light of each other. So I think it's just an unbelievable example of the of Ronsweig's approach. I think in general, perhaps sort of Ronsweig's, one of his greatest contributions is that his ability to pick up on patterns. It's brilliant, right? Just able to find little, all these mahalchim. You see this little tosos here, this there, and picks up on all these patterns. So it's remarkable. So this is just a great example of that. And it's in general, right? This like deviating from the Gemara, the Lashon, find these patterns, the global view is just an excellent example of it. Okay. But after all those kind words, let's see if it makes sense in the Rambam. All right, so let's look at the Rambam Dalia Tef up with close eyes. See what we come up with. Okay, Yisrael Mumar La'aver Min Averos. So already we see something interesting, right? Where's Teyavon? We're missing the Teyavon. Ramaf points that out immediately. What's going on? Why is it missing that word? And the assumption is that this is what we're talking about. Teyavon. It's clear, right? So where's the Teyavon? So Rambam says Yisrael Mumar Laver Min Aver Shehaya Mumcha. So he's to any Avera Shehaya Mumcha. How is it Shochel Lechachila? V'tzarech Yisrael Kasher Livdokas Asaken. But you need, you could check as long as Yisrael Kasher checks the Saken, and afterwards the Achrak Yinedel Mumar Zel Shchot. Because he has chazaka she'ino toriach livdok. Well, finish the Rambam. Im haya mumar la'avod azara, o mechal shalos v'far hasi, o apikores, and defines apikores, we'll cover the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu, k'moshe b'yarni v'hilchos tshuva, hari huka akum, mishchitas on nevela. It's as if he's an akum, mishchitas on nevela. Next halacha, mishu pasul edis ba'aver min ha'avero shel Torah. So someone who is pasul edis because of some aver min ha'avero shel Torah, even a Russia is able to, we trust them that they're not going to do something usher if they have the opportunity to do it in a mutter way. Okay, we just read the two Rambams. Now let's see if we have any issues. So first, I already pointed out issue number one. Where's Teyavon? Clearly talking about Kis Teyavon. Why does Rambam not mention it? Two, the Rambam diverges from Rava's statement in the Gemara. Right? Rava's statement is Ochel Nevelos L'Teyavon. That's the what his Avera is. Right? So why does the Rambam quote a different case? Right? He doesn't explicitly codify the main case in the Gemara. So this actually, I think we can pick up on this tension in two ways. One is the Magid Mishnah on the second Deya. I think it highlights the tension best. It says that the Rambam doesn't even paskin like Rava. I mean, the fact that the Rambam doesn't quote Rava or doesn't quote that statement, right, you know, it leads the Magid Mishnah to think in the second day that he doesn't even paskin like Rava. Okay, he does probably, according to almost all the other Nosei Kalim, but the fact that, you know, the Magid Mishnah says this just highlights this issue. And even if he does, and regardless, even if he don't say like the Magid Mishnah, right, the fact that he doesn't paskin like, that he, even if he does pass on like Rava and doesn't say it, the Magid Mishnah, you know, the Lacha Mishnah, basically, it's you know, why not quote the actual statement? Okay, third point, yeah.
What is the second day of the Magid Mishnah?
The Rava, he doesn't, meaning Rama doesn't quote the Rava statement here. So Magid Mishnah, so we're saying that, we're going to say that there's a reason for why he doesn't quote that exact case. But Magid Mishnah says, you know, he doesn't quote Rava, clearly doesn't hold like Rava. Now, that's just highlighting what the issue is in the Rambam, because it's saying the Rambam doesn't, there's an obvious issue here. So the Magid Mishnah highlights that and takes it in an entirely different direction, but either way he's still, you know, emphasizing that very point. Number three, the Rambam has a very surprising psak. Aside from not quoting Rava, his psak itself is surprising. Aver mina averos means that you need bedika sakim for shchita. It's wild. Right, this is against the Rush and the Ran. Right, it seems to be a das yachid, a very controversial das yachid. Why does Rambam have this unique pshat? What's Rambam telling us with this din? Fourth issue, shahaya mumcha. What happened to Reuven Tzvi Yitzchak mumcha in Hain? Why? What's going on? Right? Why does this diverge from the regular rule? We also noted that the Rashba disagrees with this. Right, so this is controversial. Ra agrees, but either way, it's a question. Right. Anybody who holds this has to respond to that question. Fifth point, fifth question, and I wasn't reading from a Frankel Rambam, but if I was reading from a Frankel Rambam, I would have read Mishumad and not Mumcha, and not Mumar. Right, that's a very strong law shown. Right? It's a strong Mishumad, we always assume, is a stronger formulation. So if we had the Frankel Rambam, we'd say, why is Rambam putting Mishumad here as opposed to Mumar? Six is that the Rambam's formulation of why Yisrael needs to check it is true, but it's also a little bit like misleading. It's not misleading, but it's only showing like one side of the coin, right? Because what does the Rambam say? Yisrael needs to check it. But the Rambam, what does the Rambam not mention in this halacha? What does the Rambam not mention? Yeah, the Rambam doesn't mention. So it's true. The Rambam mentions it in the next halacha. Here it says, yeah, he doesn't quote that exact line, but yeah, he's translating it to Hebrew. So Rambam does mention it, but this is so critical to the whole point of the beginning, right? Once he checks it, Rambam doesn't mention it, he mentions next halacha. Why does Rambam want to push it off? Why does he wait till next halacha to say it? Yeah.
How is that little different from the second point of how the Rambam read that verse statement? Isn't that part of Rambam's statement?
I mean, that's the explanation for Rambam's statement, but meaning I think it's two separate issues, right? That the Rambam could just. There's nothing wrong with what the Rambam said here, like in principle. Like Rambam does say all of this, it's just that he doesn't present it immediately. He presents it in the next halacha. The Rava thing is he completely diverges from what Rava says. He quotes a different case entirely.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Are you raising your hand or? Same answer as I was there.
You know, I was going to talk about the Rava point. Like Rava's thing, like Amara is. Mumur la davar echa,
Exactly. Okay, good. Now, question number 7. What does Rambam do in halacha yadalet? So the Rambam, I think, Don't quote me on this. I think the Rambam actually doesn't number the halacha, but I think the Rambam does group, I think he put it in paragraphs. So I think, you know, the fact that the Rambam, why is this in halacha yadalet, is not so significant. It's the fact that the Rambam makes it, you know, puts it together in one halacha, right? So the Rambam puts Yisrael Mumar L'Te'avon with Mumar L'Avodazar, Machal Shalas V'Hesya, Abikores, Ukover, Retor, Moshe Rabbeinu. Why does the Rambam group us all together? He's break it up into the next halacha. I think Rosh Hashanah, you know, Rambam's so worried about wasting ink, adding a new halacha. Let's add, you know, put in halacha tedvav and eat a subject with tedzayin, you know. And then, question number 8, why is the psule edos then placed in the next halacha? Or what's the connection between the two? I'm also talking about psule edos, right? Why exactly is it placed here? Okay? Yeah, maybe in Hilchos Eidos, why Dafka next halacha? I don't think this was necessarily the strongest question. Alex is giving quizzical eyes. What do you think?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
What?
It's also a question of the Shlita.
Oh, you're saying, what do you mean? Oh, yeah, that's the next question I was going to add. Yeah. Meaning, there's also a question is, I guess it's interesting, why is there a place this Psul Eidos thing here? You know, I guess maybe it could be an Eidos, it's not, you know, or placed elsewhere. Why Dafka here? Okay. That was the 8th question. But I think perhaps the more important question by Eidos was the following, which is question number 9. Why is there a different din by Psule Eidos that they can check Beno Levein Atzmo? Okay? Why is there just a different din entirely for them? Good? So those are 9 questions on the Rambam. Yeah, Devin. So why does the Rambam Dafka put that in by so you're saying replace question number 8 with that question? Okay.
Yeah, add it in.
Okay, fine. Maybe question number 10, we'll see. But the so it's interesting. The Rambam puts that here and then he integrates the what should be found earlier with Psule Eidos. So we have all these questions. What do we do with it? So instead of going through all the other Rambams now, even though that would build up the tension even more, let's explain the Rambam, and then we'll go through all the other cases, and then it'll make it just easier for us to read through them, okay? So we mentioned 2 possible interpretations for the Rambam, the second obviously being the preferred option. So the first option, though, was the Rush. The Rush says the following regarding the Rambam. Asher desavar kevin dechazinan shel tevasa over achas min avera shebetorah. Since he's willing to be over on one of era because of his teyavon, and this gets back to what Zev was saying earlier, meaning once we see that he's willing to give into his desire, in this case, we know that he'd probably be willing to give into his desire in other cases. So here, right, the Rush is not saying something about him as a garbage, it's just a practical, you know, you're lazy here, you'll be lazy in those other cases too. So I think that's actually interesting, like just behaviorally, I think that's actually a pretty interesting shot. Now, there's, you know, I think for the Rush is a good example of a Ne'amanus problem. Right? There is another way to read the Rush, but we'll just keep it simple. Right? This is like a Ne'amanus problem. We don't trust him about anything. The guy's lazy. He's willing to, you know, you're willing to cheat on this thing. You're going to cheat on the other things as well. Now, Rosa was not so into it because, you know, for a variety of reasons, primarily because it sounds like there's much more going on in the Rambam than just that. So why is the Rambam doing all of this? So I think the best way to put it is just the Rambam's intentionally trying to hint at the idea that the Teyavon is closer to a Mumar Lahachis, it's closer to being, you know, in that more severe category than we think. So it represents you being a real Mumar, right? Even though it's the Teyavon, you're still sincerely rebelling. So, you know, you don't lose all your Kedushas Yisrael, clearly not, right? But on some level, you become a Gavra Rasha, right? And the Rambam will see, and even just here, cumulatively, and sort of consistently understands that Mumar LeTeavon is a real Meshumar. He's a real Rasha. And so even, okay, so then once we've said that, let's try to work through again all these issues in the Rambam, okay? So let's go through them together, okay? So the first issue we mentioned is even though the Rambam is discussing Teyavon, right, doesn't mention the word. What's the point? The Rav Ronsai said that the Rambam intentionally wants to confuse you, right? That he wants you to think that maybe this could be a real Mumar, right? It's not just Mumar Teyavon, meaning it's the same, right? It's, you know, they're so similar, right? Or maybe this din would apply, but they're just interchangeable to some extent. Now, they're not, but the point is the Rambam wants you to at least have this, like, you know, thought in your head, to trigger that thought in your head before you see, okay, clearly it's not what he's talking about. Later on, he, you know, breaks it up. But he wants you to be thinking about the Mumar, a real Mumar, when he's talking about Mumar LeTeyavon. Now, why is the Rambam not quote Rava's statement? Because the Rambam's trying to, you know, again, the Rambam's making a point, based on what we said earlier about, you know, Mumar LeChol Torah Kula. He's trying to, even though he doesn't actually paskin that, he's trying to make a point to us that, you know, the Rava statement is extending beyond just this, you know, Mumar LeOso Devar. It also extends to these other cases, okay? Now, the third point, this is really critical, is that what about why does the Rambam hold that any Avera mandates that you have Bedika Sakin? So what's the reason for that? And so, because the Rambam thinks that the halachic system is a holistic, integrated system. All of Taryag, all the Aseis and Losa Aseis, everything's interconnected. And so, just to give a couple examples of that, right? So, Kabbalah's Ol Malchus and Geiros. Probably the best example of that is in Hilchos Dayanim and Shoftim. Right? We talk about a Dayan. You need someone who's Roy Lahoros B'chol Torah Kula. Why do I need someone who's Roy Lahoros B'chol Torah Kula? He's an expert in Hilchos Shabbos. Why do I need him to know Hilchos Kilayim? But the point is, it's one integrated holistic unit. So if you really are supposed to know the system, you have to know Hilchos Shabbos, you need to know everything. You need to know the whole system together. Kilayim being impacts Shabbos. And so we're saying the same thing here, right? That for the Rambam, being lax in one area reflects on you entirely as a person. It's one integrated, you're willing to be lax here. This shows you're a Gavra Rasha for everything else. Because you can't just, you know, bifurcate between these mitzvos and the other mitzvos. Four, why does the dafka have to be a mumcha? Because what I'm saying, this guy's Gavra Rasha. We need to basically take it to the extreme with this guy, right? He's, you know, he's a real Gavra Rasha. He needs to be, we're not treating him as some, just, oh, the guy has a few flaws. We're treating him much more severely than that. Meshumad makes sense, right? Again, trying to demonstrate that Mumar LeTeyavon is really, you know, a rough guy. Six was the, why doesn't he mention it to the next halacha? Because the Rambam is trying to emphasize the negative side of the coin, right? He wants to Eino Tereach Livdok. He's trying to really emphasize the negative side of this guy. And later on, he'll mention the other thing. But he's, at least at the beginning, the Rambam is trying to emphasize that this guy has a real problem. Why does the Rambam group all these types together? Again, right? He's trying to teach us something by grouping it all together, right? He's trying to teach us that really they're all similar. Just because the motivation doesn't matter as much, the sin is what matters. Well, okay, so why is the Psula Eidos didn't mention the next halacha? So, the thing, what we were trying to say basically is the following, is that even though it's different, we consider those Psula Eidos to have a Psula Gavra. Right? A Psula Eidos is a Psula Gavra, the guy loses his ability to be an aid. But that's the first one. That answers question number eight, right? Why is this group together? We're trying to emphasize that these are all absolutely, you know, Gavra Rasha. But what about the next thing? Why is there a difference? So the Rambam is also trying to mention that there's, to emphasize that there's a difference between doing something berigilos and consistently, and doing something just one time. So if you just look at the cases in Hilchos Idos, Perek Yud, right? So he talks about Psulia Rasha de Chamas, and someone who does a chiyuv, someone gets chiyuv makos. What's that? What's that talking about? So that's like a one-time sin, right? I did this vira, I get makos for it. But that makes you a gavra rasha. But why aren't they puzzled from doing shchita? Because there's a difference between someone who's hurgo ba'avira, someone who's a mumar l'teyavon, who does something consistently, and someone who's just a one-time sinner, right? So it's, again, this is also a way of contrasting and to emphasize what is so bad about a mumar l'teyavon is a someone who consistently sins. Now, the Beis Yosef here makes it has an interesting point. So the Beis Yosef basically says exactly what we just pointed out. It says, "Av b'she'ino muad," yeah, exactly. He says, "La avro la mitzvah b'chol eish tzarei uparak olam me'ol tzavara." Someone who's just constantly sinning. That's more like te'avon. That's when you have the inability to shech. But a pasul eidos is someone who's obviously in a muad la'avor osa mitzvah. He's not consistently muad on it. He's just over a la'a pamachas. Now, the Beis Yosef, now in the end, disagrees with this, but at least the initial idea was exactly the point we were trying to make. There's a difference. We're trying to say there's different levels within Gavra Rasha. Okay? Everyone said I did not find the Beis Yosef's point compelling. Fine. I just wanted to make one qualifier. So this is the Rambam Hilchos Shechita. I just wanted to make one qualifying point, which is that you can hold Gavra Rasha but not be as strong as the Rambam, just very clearly, right? Like the Rambam always said holds Gavra Rasha. He doesn't think that just because you're a mumar for kilayim, you know, over a barrel of table in kilayim, makes you puzzle for Shechita. So just there are different gradations of this Gavra mumar. Okay, well, I'm not going to finish by 2:30, so if anyone wants to leave it, certainly welcome to. We're just going to finish up the other issues in the Rambam now. Okay, so now that we've explained this approach in the Rambam, right? We can that it's the Rambam really views mumar l'tevon very severely, right? We can try to explain, a number of other issues in the Rambam. Okay, so we'll go through these quickly. So, so as a quick question. Okay, let's talk afterwards, though, because I want to... Okay, so we'll mention, I think, six or seven other issues here, very quickly. Okay, Rama Maisar Korbanos. So Rama Maisar Korbanos, Paskins, that a Mumar La'oso Davar can't bring a Korban, and he says, Bein Lahachis, Bein L'Teyavon, In Mekabim Mimenu Korban La'oso Avera. If he's a Mumar for a certain Avera, you can't accept a Korban from him on that. The Rambam also says v'hur galba, very important, right? We just said that, consistent. So why is Rambam saying bein lahachas, bein l'teyavon, grouping them together? What's going on here in the Rambam? So he's trying to emphasize, and the Rambam read the Gemara this way, that really there's not such a gap between them. Mumar l'teyavon, mumar lahachas, really they're the same genre. That's number one, that's Maisar Korbanos. Two is Matnos Aniyim. So Matnos Aniyim, Perichet Halacha Yudalid. Yeah, there's also stuff here about Pikuach Nefesh, but we're not going to get into that. But regarding being a Podea Mumar L'Teyavon, okay? So the Gemara in Gittin, if you remember, it discusses the din of Pidyon Shvuyim, being Mocher Asmubana for Pidyon Shvuyim, okay? So the Gemara talks about a case of a Mumar, and it sounds like for a Mumar, you're not allowed to be Podea him, okay? And then the Gemara distinguishes between Mumar L'Hachas and Mumar L'Teyavon. Now, what that leaves vague or ambiguous is what are you supposed to do about a mumar l'teyavon? So the Rambam says, shavui shehemir. Okay? Vague formulation. We don't know what to actually say. Shavui shehemir. So again, we're trying to point. Okay, so then we'll make the point in a second. And then it says, then he goes on and says, zafil mitzvah achas go on ochel levelos l'haches. Then he says l'haches. So he starts out with stam mumar and then clarifies the same mumar l'haches. So the Radvaz quotes some who are quotes an opinion who are medayik in the Rambam that it's actually optional to be poda mumar l'teyavon, even though he himself disagrees. Okay, so two points here. One is the Rambam starts out Shavuot Shehemir, vague, no idea what the Rambam's talking about yet. And the second point is that we said the Radvaz says that for the Rambam, it's actually optional to be Podem Umar L'Teyabon, okay? So Rav Rosenzweig thought that there were two important points here. First, that the Rambam starts off with a broad idea and then gets specific. Why? So it's to say that this din could have been a Mumar L'Teyavon as well. Like the, okay, in the end it's only Mumar L'Hachas, but really not such a distance, not such a gap. And he also omits Mumar L'Teyavon, right? Very interesting. So the idea of the Radvaz that suggested is also extremely, you know, right, the fact that this is, it's vague and it could be that L'Teyavon is only optional, the Rambam as the Radvaz suggests, that again points to this idea that there's not such a gap between the two. It's a real Gavra Rasha, just like a Mumar L'Hachas. And therefore, it might even be optional. Good, is that point clear? Good. Next halacha is Hilchos Rotzeach Dal Yudbet. So the Rambam, when he's mechalik for a Moridin and Ein Moridin, in the case we discussed before, says that there's a mitzvah to save a Mumar L'Teyavon, and there's also an Isra Lamod Al Dam Reacha. Great. But what's significant about the Rambam? The Rambam begins by saying, B'med Devarim Amurim. So at the beginning, though, what does the Rambam do? The Rambam has to clarify what type of mumar he's talking about. It's not clear, right? Yeah, sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the categories as they're both similar, right? The Rishos HaGavra. So it's necessary, therefore, to clarify. Fourth point in the Rambam is the Hilchos Tefillin Aleph Yud Gimel. So there, the Rambam says that basically, the Rambam says, "Save the Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzah, Shekatva, Apikoros, Yisrafu, Katvan Kuti, O Yisrael, Mumar, O Moser, Biat Anas, O Ever Yishal, Katan, Har Elup Sulin, their apostle, Viyignizu, and Yergonez them." Good. Now, what type of Mumar are we talking about? So it's interesting that the Rambam doesn't feel a need to like define what type of Mumar we're talking about. Sometimes, right? Yisrael Mumar, like what? You know, tell us which one. So one is that the fact that the Rambam is able to like sort of use it ubiquitously is very interesting. But the point we're trying to make is that, so most Mefarshim think that this is only Mumar L'Hachas. That's most Mefarshim. Apparently the Evan Ezel thinks that, holds that it's a regular Mumar. Mumar L'Teyavon even. I didn't see the Evan Ezel on the side, someone told me that. So the Rav Rosenzweig also thought that this may be referring to Mumar L'Teyavon, right? Not only L'Hachas. And which is a Chiddush, but it's also very, you know, it's very telling that the Rambam is just able to use Yisrael Mumar without clarifying. It's, again, it's like all one thing. If that's true, the Rambam is able to use Yisrael Mumar. He doesn't even need to categorize or differentiate between them. Again, you see how this Mumar L'Teyavon really fits in with all these other types of Mumrim. Number five, Hildos Gzela Yud Aleph Bet. So there the Rambam, it's an interesting diuk, but he says, Afilo Hayubala Veda Rasha. So the Rambam says, I'm not 100% sure how to read this. I'm not sure if it's Baal HaVeda Rasha and the case of Ochel Nevela L'Teyavon, or it's the guy is a Rasha and he's Ochel Nevela L'Teyavon, and basically Ochel Nevela L'Teyavon is sort of like part of this, oh, this guy's a Rasha. So, but I think the way he tried to read it in Shir, at least basically says, the Rambam either implies or basically refers or even refers to as Ochel Nevela L'Teyavon as a Rasha. He also refers to Mumar L'Hachas as a min, so there still is this differentiation there, but it's the notion that you're going to kind of group the Rambam with group the Mumar L'Teyavon with a Rasha, or even categorize it as a Rasha. What a strong description of Mumar L'Teyavon. Again, clearly projecting how negatively the Rambam views Mumar L'Teyavon. Two final points, and this is not the Rambam, this is Nosi Kalem on the Rambam. So the sixth point is the Mari Korkis. I haven't had the chance to see it inside, but I searched, but I couldn't find it. I don't know where it is. I searched in Chicago, so I couldn't find it there. It's in Maisa Korbanos?
Yeah.
Ah, that's probably the reason why I couldn't find it. Okay. So, you'll tell me if I got it wrong, all right? So, I think, basically, what I think we said is the Mari Korkas in I guess, Maisa Korbano, basically wonders why the Rambam doesn't hold that a Mumar L'Chelev is a Mumar L'Dam. Okay? Now, the Gemara in Horios says Rava rejects this. So it's not surprising at all that the Rambam doesn't hold it. But why did the Mari Korkas think that the Rambam should hold this? And it's because that the same way we've been kind of viewing the Rambam very expansively and thinking that Mumar Teavon is really, you know, bad. It extends to all the other, you know, Mumar Teavon in one area of Halacha applies to all the other cases of, you know, for Shechita. The point is that the Rambam is a very broad view and it impacts all these areas. Mumar Teavon is really bad. And so, therefore, the Mahari Korkus assumed that the Rambam would expand it even more. He doesn't, and the Mahari Korkus is surprised, but the fact that the Mahari Korkus assumes that he should have this expanded view clearly reflects on what he thinks the Rambam really is all about. Again, that the Mumar Teavon extends beyond just, oh, a guy, it makes a few mistakes. Finally, we have the Lechem Mishnah and Shkagos. Bet. And I'm going to defer to Yehuda on this.
I thought it was different.
Oh, so Lechem Mishnah, so you're off the hook. So Lechem Mishnah in Shkagos, we'll say very briefly. So basically the Rambam there paskins like Rav Yochanan Bashigas Kares, and then there's a whole issue because you're paskin like Rav Yochanan, then it comes into all these issues of Gemara. So I don't want to get into that now because that's a longer discussion. I'm also I find it a little confusing because it's given numerous Gemaras, to be honest. But basically, the whole point we were trying to make there, and this in the Lechem Mishnah, the Lechem Mishnah has his own answer. The point we were trying to make is that, yeah, maybe the Rambam reads this Gemara B'dochak. Maybe his reading is schwer. He's combining opinions that shouldn't be combined. But the point is that since the Rambam has this global view of what a Mumar L'Teyavon is all about, the Rambam, it's going to impact the way Rambam reads Gemaras. And so even though it doesn't seem to fully shtim in that Gemara there, the Rambam is going to not misread, but he's going to kind of come up with these, you know, not pashut readings of Gemaras to try to adapt his global perspective. I apologize not explaining that more fully, but take a look at the Rambam, the Lechem Mishnah, Shkagos, Bet. So here we just quickly review, right? We mentioned seven other issues in the Rambam, aside from all the ones we mentioned in Shechita Schulin. We mentioned Maaser Karbanos. We talked about where the Rambam sort of says, being Lahachis, being the Teyavon, for bringing a Korban. Manos Aniyim, where the Rambam, A, leaves it vague, what type of Mumar he's talking about at the beginning. Then we quoted the Radvaz, right, about how it might be optional to redeem a Mumar L'Teyavon. We talked about Rotzeach, the Rambam has to say, B'med Devarim Amurim. We talked about in Tefillin, where the Rambam might have been referring to Yisrael Mumar L'Teyavon. Just by saying Yisrael Mumar, it's ubiquitous. It's not, you know, he doesn't need to clarify. The Helchos Gezela, maybe calls him a Rasha. Mahari Korkus thinks it should be expanded, and Lechem Mishnah points out that the Rambam is coming up with these non-simple readings of the Gemara as in order to maybe, and as we said, maybe in order to adapt to his more global view. Okay, Shkoyach.